We're welcoming in Tim McAuliffe, the host of Tim and Sid on Sportsnet. Tim, good to talk to you. I wanted to talk to you in person here, but just never worked out today. But nonetheless, great talking to you on the phone. How are things, bud?
They sent me home for the day, David, so I figured I'd join you on the phone. The kids were happy for a couple of moments, and then now they're done. They're done with me. They're back to the TV show. So
there you go.
We're going to come talk to you boys.
Hey, and you know what? And we thank you for doing it. We're about 53 minutes away from tip in Houston. A big game for the Raptors. A back-to-back game. They face a red-hot Houston Rocket team. No Norm Powell, as we know, he's been ruled out right now with that hip pointer. No word exactly on his return. We expect that he will be back sooner than later. It's not one of those things where we'll see him in December or something of that nature. But let's look at a Houston perspective.
He's not Carey Price?
Very early. Exactly. Yeah. 7 minutes into the show. I love it. No Chris Paul. You know, you can almost make the comparison. Chris Paul is almost as valuable. Maybe not quite as valuable, but Chris Paul, not in the Rockets lineup, won't be for some time. Are you surprised the Rockets are as good as they are without a Chris Paul right now?
You know, it's funny, I was on my ride home yesterday, I was listening to you guys talk to Jonesy about the very same thing, about how, you know, the Rockets have won six straight. Chris Paul, not in the lineup, hasn't been there. And during the streak, the numbers are impressive, like first in the league in offensive rating, rebound percentage, second at Golden State, and a bunch of different numbers, and fourth in defensive rating. What James Harden is doing right now is ridiculous. And the numbers speak for themselves. He's shooting it from three. He's also averaging, I guess, 11.5 assists during the time. I'm kind of jaw-dropped, and I wonder if this ball-in-hand type of guy is what's going to work. I mean, they're actually talking in Houston about what's the scheme team going to do when Chris Paul comes back to the lineup? How will they adjust when Chris Paul comes back to the lineup? We're talking about one of the, you know, the best point guards of our generation.
Yes.
They've been really, really good. And it's going to be interesting to see how all this works out. Everyone's trying to kind of, you know, offensive power up with as many stars as possible. And I know you guys want to talk about the Cavs, and I think they'll be different once Isaiah Thomas comes back. But it takes a long time to figure out, especially when you got guys like Harden and like Paul who operate with the ball in their hands. And it's going to be real interesting to see how Houston shakes down. But as the Raptors go in, they're playing as good as anyone in the league.
Exactly the case with the Rockets being red hot and with Powell being out. I mean, the starting five, I think it's probably going to be OG and defensively probably going up against one or both of Harden and Eric Gordon. But what would you like to see shake out in terms of the starting five going forward? Or would you rather play it on a matchup by matchup basis in terms of going with CJ or OG?
Joshy, I think it's going to be a little bit of everything. I think Dwayne Casey wants to use CJ off the bench. And I think when we saw OG Anunoby and Fred VanVleet on the floor in a late game situation, it was kind of clear what Dwayne Casey's going to do with this regular season. And we saw it early last regular season. I don't know if you remember Pascal Siakam getting a bunch of starts at the start of last season. You know, we saw Jakob Poeltl go through kind of a stretch where he saw minutes and then went back to the bench. To me, the Raptors early season, and I know this is frustrating for people who sit down and watch their games all the time or listen to their games with Smitty and Jonesy on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. But I think it's going to be about investing in the future, right? Like, I think it's going to be where Dwayne Casey, Masai Ujiri need to see what they have in guys like OG Anunoby and Fred VanVleet and everybody through that bench. And I think we're going to see a little bit of everything. I don't know about a rookie against James Harden on the road. I don't know how many calls he'll get. And I guarantee you if OG gets that call to start, we'll see a couple of early situations where James Harden's just going to take it at him and try and get him in foul trouble. And I know he's not going to get those calls. I can almost see it coming. And when it happens, you guys can tweet me and let me know. But if they do put OG Anunoby in there, he is physical. He is strong. He's going to be a really good defender in the league. I just don't know if James Harden on the road is the way you want to throw. I mean, baptism by fire, boys. Maybe he'll respond differently, and maybe the referees will put some whistles in the pocket. But I feel like this is one where I would put someone else in there, let them get the first shot, even if you plan on playing OG 30 minutes.
We're in conversation with Tim McAuliffe. He's the host of the Tim and Sid Show on Sportsnet. Okay, you touched on it for a bit there, Tim, and I want to get into that rotation Dwayne Casey's using. How long is he going to use that 12-man rotation? Because it seems kind of weird. It seems, you know, like everybody gets a turn. It's almost like you and I playing at the school gym where, you know what, make sure everybody gets their turn, right?
My Bantam boys basketball team at Senator O'Connor on the Scarborough, North York border, we used to play three lines of five. It was like a hockey shift. Like everyone would go on. And then by the time we got to the playoffs, about half the guys on what we considered to be the third line, including myself, said, you know what, coach, do us all a favor and just play the best guys. And we ended up losing in the semifinal. I feel like I can compare the Raptors to my Bantam boys basketball team at Senator O'Connor. We're going to see a lot of this. And we're going to figure out who can hang and who can't hang. And by the end, by the time you get to the playoffs, hopefully the coach of the Toronto Raptors will have a better idea than the coach of the Senator O'Connor Blues. And they'll shorten the bench and figure out who can go where and when. Because here's the deal. Every Raptors fan has to come to the conclusion that you know what this team is as currently constituted with DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry doing what DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry have done for the last 3 years, and that is be all-stars, be among the upper echelon in the NBA, and it's just not good enough in the Eastern Conference. If you want to revert to that when you get to the playoffs, go ahead. But you know what the outcome is if LeBron is healthy and Cleveland starts clicking. We know what the outcome is against the Boston Celtics without Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward. Like, I think we all kind of know what they are. What you need to figure out, you have to invest the regular season and see what else can come up. And, you know, I don't know if Serge Ibaka is the answer. I know they invested money like he's the answer. I don't know if Norm Powell is good enough to create his own shot, especially when Aaron Baines is dropping bombs on him. But we're going to have to find all these things out. And if it's Lucas Nogueira against a quicker lineup that works, then let's see that. If OG Anunoby can get offensively to the point where he's not a liability or Fred VanVleet is not the guy that people rotate off, this team is going to be so much better for it in the postseason. And Raptor fans are just going to have to deal with that for 82 games.
What did you make of sort of the crunch time sets against Boston? I know a lot of people on Twitter in general were just kind of sighing that it was the same old, ISO ball, ISO sets. And that sort of, to me, we were talking with Jonesy about this last night. I think that's just sort of basketball, especially in the NBA. You clear out one side of the floor for a star player, whoever it is. There's a lot of guys in the league who take and make those shots. And it's whether you make or miss it. But the shot was fine. I had no problem with the shot with DeRozan. He makes that most times. But to me, it was the two or three prior to that where there just wasn't the emphasis on swinging the ball around, getting the best possible look. And I don't know if that's just sort of the way it is in crunch time or if it was reverting back to, you know, the status quo when it comes to the Raptors offense.
Yeah, no, I think this is what you got to worry about. I think that you if you're going to impress upon everybody that this ball movement offense is remarkably important, then you've got to practice that down the stretch. I don't have a problem with the ISO in the final two possessions. And I spoke to my coaching brethren to try and get an idea of whether or not I'm old school when I think you need some ball movement, you need a screen, you need maybe to call a play, get to the rim. And the idea, just for those who maybe don't have some coaches high up that they can, you know, call up and have them tell them what they're thinking. But in the NBA, there's so many coaches, there's so well schooled, and there's so much videotape that any play that you call, most good coached or well-coached teams can blow it up before it even starts. And even on a screen, you're asking for that switch to be, any sort of handoff, any sort of pass. The players are so good that coaches are content with playing one-on-one basketball. So I was, and I understood it. Now it's up to your best player, in this case, DeMar DeRozan, to get a good shot in those late clock situations. And I thought the first opportunity when they switched Horford off, unfortunately, you can't dump it down to Ibaka, who I think had Jaylen Brown on him. But you got to get a better shot than a contested fadeaway when you have Al Horford on you. The second shot I liked. The second shot I think that, you know, the Raptors and the Raptor fans would live with each and every time. So I'm with you up until, you know, maybe the last two possessions when you don't want turnovers. But I think it was Elias Sports Bureau who put out the number on DeMar DeRozan late game. I think it's under a minute down 1 point in his career. He's now 2 of 16.
Yeah.
And if that's the number, and listen, it's just a small sample size, and I know I'm cherry picking when you do the down 1 point, not up 2 points, which is just as crunch, or maybe even tied just as crunch. But I think that tells you a lot about what DeMar DeRozan's able to get, and officials don't want to make a call. So if you want to get to the rim, you know that you're probably going to take a contested shot there too. So I don't know what the answer is. And I think the Raptors know they got to get two great players in pick and roll situations if they want to run that. I remember against Golden State, the difference, the Raptors are running ISO and Steph and Kevin Durant are in your pick and roll situation for the Warriors. Steph gives it up to Durant. Durant wins the game. It's like everyone's saying we're going to run Golden State stuff, and they don't have Durant. They don't have Steph. They don't have Clay. They don't have Draymond. Like, it's just, it seems to me like a lot of people are chasing their tail right now. And the Raptors in the Eastern Conference have a chance to get there, but they've got to be committed to it.
You mentioned the best players running pick and rolls together. I honestly would like to see DeRozan and Lowry, you know, run more sets for each other, because, I mean, I know they're both guards, or DeRozan could play the occasional small forward, but anytime you can switch around two defenders on your two best players who are pretty good shooters, I feel like it puts you in an advantage to either get a good shot or catch a guy, you know, slipping a little bit and take it to the rim for a free throw or an easy look.
Yeah. You know what's funny is, and I know there's people out there that think I don't like DeMar DeRozan, and I was asking more of him 3 years ago when he was shooting 41%, and he has come through, and he is, you know, improved each and every year. So now as I say that, I'm just going to say in Kyle Lowry's case, at his size and his game, it's tough because people will just, I mean, he does not operate all that well in tight late game situations because it's hard for him to get his shot off in those spots. And that's why I think, you know, if it's just pick and roll, or maybe you're running flare screens in the off, and I know they kind of, they gave a look against Boston where they ran a flare screen, and I might be getting too deep for some, but they ran a flare screen for Lowry. Ibaka set it on the second possession that DeRozan had, and Horford was just too smart. He's like, if you want Ibaka to take this shot from way out there, go ahead. I'm going to stay in the middle of the lane and help contest with Jaylen Brown. So, like, I don't know if those two guys late game, Josh, are what you need, but I agree with you. I think they're a better chance than anything else you got, so you might as well give it a few shots late.
You're listening to Sportsnet tonight, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on the line with Tim McAuliffe, the host of Tim and Sid on Sportsnet. Tim, let's change things up for a second. 10 weeks in the books in the NFL season. Takeaways from the 10 weeks. What's your major surprise and what's your major failure? Or is that one and the same?
Oof, I think my major failure is Tampa Bay. And I think a lot of people expected more out of them this year. And I think, you know, it'll end up costing the coach's job. And we'll sit and wonder what Jameis Winston really is. But I think Tampa for me is my big time surprise. On the flip side, I'm still buzzing from Monday night, and I wonder is there any chance that Cam Newton is better without Calvin Benjamin?
Yeah.
Because like that to me, and I know, listen, Cam Newton is at best a mystery. And, you know, like I got him in fantasy and he just won me my week, but I can tell you about the other weeks that he's had where I'm just shaking my, I'm like the Simpsons, shake harder, boy, shake harder. I don't know what that offense is, but they just started running the ball again. And I am thoroughly impressed with what they've done through 2 weeks against Atlanta and Miami. And I'm still buzzing about it, and I wonder what's it going to be down the stretch. And I'll throw out in that division, New Orleans.
Yes, that was my follow-up, yep.
Like, New Orleans going into Buffalo, and how Buffalo is that? Like, oh, my goodness. the Bills had two opportunities at home against New Orleans, and they get their asses handed to them, and on the road against a beatable Jets team, and in both occasions, like, they win both those, and the drought's over. So I'm going to throw out there a lost opportunity for Buffalo, and New Orleans looks way better than I ever thought. Okay. I was going to say, and they got better by trading Peterson.
Yeah, which is crazy. It almost freed up the backs. They had, you know, the pain in the ass behind them, like nudging them on the shoulder. All of a sudden, they break through and they're fantastic. It's a different style of Saints team that we're used to watching. We don't see Drew Brees throwing for 500 yards and four touchdowns. We see two horses in the backfield. Is that the best team in the division, or are you still pointing at the Panthers?
I like the Panthers' defense more, but if we're going to see, I mean, what did Drew Brees end up with? And he scored 41 points, and Drew Brees was just a part of it.
He had a rushing touchdown.
He threw for 184 yards, and they put up 41.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how often that's going to happen. I don't know how often Ingram and Kamara are going to run for 100 each, which they did over the weekend against a pretty good Bills defense.
Yes.
I mean, I'm still... It's one of those ones where I say, let me keep watching these guys and seeing if it's real. And then we're up to 7-2. And I'm like, maybe this thing is real. Maybe, you know, Kamara's dynamic.
Yeah.
Like, he's dynamic running the ball. And you got Ingram, who is, you know, just a when he's not fumbling, he's a really, really good back. And Kamara just seems to me like a bigger, stronger Darren Sproles for Drew Brees.
It's been a weird season because the games haven't been all that great on a week-to-week basis. I mean, there's been some good ones, but there's been a lot of dogs. And, I mean, it's led to – it looks like there's going to be a lot of good, you know, battles for playoff spots down the stretch. I think there's 10 teams at 5-4 better in the NFC. But for me, it's kind of – like, there's a parallel to the NBA because you've got the NFC, which is like the Western Conference, just dog eat dog. And then you've got the AFC, which is kind of like the East with the Cavs. Is anyone going to be able to really knock off the Patriots when it matters most? And we were talking about how the Patriots haven't been that great. Their defense sucks, and that. But they're 7-2, and they've held five straight teams under 18 points.
Yeah, and I mean, I watch them, and I see the improvements on defense, and you see Tom Brady out there. I watch the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they're 7-2, but, I mean, there are games in that 7-2, and this weekend was, I mean, they fought tooth and nail to beat a bad Indianapolis team. I'm with you on that, the NBA analogy. The East is just a dog pile, and we'll wait till, you know, the end to start sorting through who's real and who's fake. And I don't know if the NFC is any different. I mean, I could poke a hole. You give me a team, I'll poke a hole in it, and we'll move on. And I don't think that anyone has. If you have a team that you like and you think that, I would put money on Vegas because you're getting good odds on everybody right now, except for the Patriots, because they never get good odds.
No, never, and never will. Final question, Tim, before we say goodnight. CFL playoffs, they're down to the division finals. Who are the two teams that are going to break
you,
off?
Bastel. This is big for you, Bastel. you know what's funny? We had a topic on our show. Can anyone knock off the Stamps? And I really liked Edmonton this weekend against Winnipeg.
They look good, Tim. They look really good.
They do look good. And they have a little bit of everything. Now, I'm not saying that they can knock off the Stamps, but I think they got a shot. Mike Riley's numbers in the postseason. I mean, what is he now? I think it's 27 touchdowns. And one interception, maybe it's 22 touchdowns and one interception. I forget the exact number, but I know it's one interception to over 20 touchdowns in the postseason, 5-2 record. He's got a ton of guts. And I don't know if I'm the Stamps that I want to be facing that guy, but this is the league, right? Like there's not many teams to choose from. And I think the Riders got a little lucky over the weekend. I think Trevor Harris, made a couple of key mistakes. The Red Blacks made a couple of key mistakes and gave the game to the Riders. I don't know if they can do it again, but I will give Chris Jones, who, while I might not agree with the way he does it, he is a hell of a football coach.
Yeah, exactly. Tim, great catching up with you, bud. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk again.
You know what? To all the listeners listening in, I got a lot of respect for the two guys hosting the show. Josh worked as our as our intern on Tim and Sid did a bang up job, and I love hearing him on the air. Bastel, we go back to drinks in the Red Mile way back in the day. I don't even know if you remember that, but for all the listeners, I got a lot of respect for both of these guys hosting this show, and I come on with you guys anytime.